Fantasy Focus Football is presented by Geico. Switch to Geico today and see all the ways you could save. It is Wednesday. We are into June. June 1st, to be specific. Field and Matthew hanging out with you. Daniel actually wasn't in the studio as the music hit, and I was wondering if perhaps he was setting us up for something, and there was some sort of ruse in play here.
Like a big reveal.
No. Yeah. I'll tell you exactly what it is.
Oh.
Daniel likes proving the fact, you know, like, listen, you don't really need me, and this is just more proof of it.
That's not true. Trump, yeah, Daniel.
Not true.
I'm just, your response to that matter.
I had to poo.
Okay. That was not what I was expecting you to say.
Okay, well, but we're everything live, goes. So there we go.
Yeah, we're live, yeah. So there's no way to edit this thing out. Good to be on with you guys today.
Good to be on with you.
So it's June.
Say what you want about Daniel Dopp. He is at least here. I mean, you know, he showed up a few seconds late.
Yeah.
But
no, you know
he's
what?
He's here.
That's right.
I feel like there's somebody who isn't here.
You know what he does? So yesterday was 100 days until the NFL season begins,
yes, I
right?
saw that tweet. Good
so
tweet.
On NFL Live, we did a theme of keeping it 100.
Oh, I see what you guys did. Yeah, they're right. Very clever.
And people, I think, very quickly were like, that sounds awkward when Field says it.
Sure.
Right? So I'm going to make sure that going forward, I say keeping it 100 as much as possible.
1,000%.
So Daniel always does.
Yes.
Keep it 100.
He does.
All right,
he
now I'm actually, I've effectively retired from saying it. I'm just going to say, I'm either going to say,
does,
like, he
you know
keeps
who
it
has
real.
Not is Starfanya Bell. Once again, queen of the boondoggle. I right. don't know. The world's longest vacation.
Did I hear accurately? She is jumping off of cliffs in Jamaica. Is that correct?
I think that was last week. I believe this time she is now in Aruba. And okay. then, or wait.
Is she it Monaco?
She may be on her way to Monaco by now, okay. actually, now that you're talking
right, because
about
didn't, like, I guess they were saying that after the F1 event this past weekend there, they were like, the big event takes place midweek of this week.
Correct.
Maybe that was what they were referring to.
The Stefania party, I think, is what they call it.
Oh, okay. Did you get invited?
No, I did not.
Weird.
I did not. I did get I got an email from the PR person
right.
asking me if I would like to stand on the red carpet and interview Stefania as she walked into the party.
Wow.
Offering me it's a pre-party spot. Just basically, they give you a spot on the red carpet on
square.
The other side of the rope
yeah.
to interview the celebrities as they come in. Mm. So it says very clearly no party access,
right.
but they would allow me to stand there and interview for my own social feeds or
wow, it's
for
say,
ESPN.
You know what's weird
is
that like, that's better than what I got because I got an email from a PR person saying like I had the right to tweet about the fact that you were going to be on the red
oh,
carpet
nice.
There. I couldn't Fair. Actually mention Stefania by name.
For Fair. Immediate release.
Matthew for immediate
Berry
release. Yeah, we'll be interviewing.
Be
and they told me royalty was how I was allowed to address yeah. her. Royalty Fair. And royalty
wow.
only.
Wow.
We've
correct.
Got a show coming up today. And
Dude.
It's June. Yeah, I promise.
we so, are actually getting to football.
I think we're supposed to. We have some football to get to. But yeah. we've got a story. That one of the cool things about, listen, Memorial Day weekend is an incredibly important weekend in our country for so many reasons. We remember the men and women who have bravely served our country and unfortunately were lost in battle. It's incredibly sad to reflect upon the circumstances that led to that. It is.
We are truly the home of the free because of the brave.
Well said right there. Memorial Day weekend, that is what the core of it is. It has also become the ceremonial beginning of summer
yes.
and has often represented one of the quietest times on the football calendar. I'm not trying to say that's more important or anything close to as important with the holiday is itself, right? But it is often a three-day getaway when very little football news is discussed in any way, shape, or form. And yet, I believe it was Friday night, all of a sudden, I get a text from somebody asking me if I'd heard about the Tommy Pham and Jock Peterson story. I had not. And then someone else texted me. And then someone else texted me. And then someone else texted me. By the way, these are all group threads. You were on at least two of those
yeah.
group threads. Within
the
like
amount of group threads I was on and about that situation
yeah.
is...
it was crazy.
I actually might have been on one with Tommy Pham. I have to check.
Okay, yeah.
It was unbelievable.
So we're going to talk about that situation in great depth
yeah.
and not just recap it and not just tell you the same things that you have read about over the past few days, but just offer a little bit of insight as well into maybe some guidance of how to be the best commissioner that you can be if you choose to take on that responsibility, which, although inglorious, is also invaluable to fantasy football. But because we have a responsibility, we're going to do just a scotch of news before we get to that story. So the Cardinals recently signed Darrell Williams to a one-year deal, Matthew. Yeah. So Darrell Williams, pretty solid little player for Kansas City.
Love Darrell Williams, always underrated Darrell Williams. We talked about him last preseason as everyone was hyping up Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Yep. We were saying, hey, Darrell Williams is a better player than you think. They love him in pass protection. They like him in close. He ended up scoring 8 times last year on just 191 touches. Yep. And he was very fantasy relevant for a number of weeks when he had the Chiefs starting running back job. More or less to himself.
Yep.
So given the fact that James Conner, so what happened with the Cardinals is, again, like, because people pay different levels of attention during the offseason. If you missed it somehow, Chase Edmonds is no longer a member of the Arizona Cardinals. He is now a member of the Miami Dolphins. The Cardinals did bring back James Conner, signed him to a nice contract. He was on a one-year prove-it deal last year. He proved it. He had a great season. James Conner comes back, and it's sort of the conventional wisdom is that he is going to be the guy. You'll see some Eno Benjamin in there as well, but really it was going to be James Conner. But as much as we all like James Conner, the fact of the matter is that James Conner has never played every game in an NFL season, not once in a 5-year career. He never has played every single game. He is somebody who, unfortunately, has been dogged by injuries throughout his career. And look, if you know James Conner's backstory, you know this is one of the toughest guys in the NFL. This is not a knock on the man's toughness. He is unbelievably tough. It's a great story. But the fact is that he has had trouble staying on the field. And so having some insurance like Darrell Williams makes a lot of sense for the Cardinals. And I think he eats into James Conner's fantasy value a little bit, both in terms of, you know, he'll probably vulture 3-4 touchdowns. Even assuming James Conner plays every game.
Yeah.
I think there's a chance that Darrell Williams will, just because of the various package they'll be in or whatever, that Darrell Williams vultures a handful of touchdowns from James Conner over the course of a football NFL season. And I think he's a better pass catcher than he probably gets credit for, you know. 47 passes last season. James Conner, also a good pass catcher. But again, like, Darrell Williams, really good pass blocker. And I could see him in on a number of third downs. I think this is more about hurting Eno Benjamin's value than really taking James Conner out of that low-end RB1 conversation. But I would think if I were Mike Clay, and I'm not, but if I were Mike Clay, I would think this would lower my projections for James Conner a little bit.
Maybe a little bit. I think my big takeaways were comparable to yours. I feel better that if I'm drafting an insurance running back in Arizona, if I have James Conner on my roster, that it will be Darrell Williams.
Agreed.
Eno Benjamin, I understand some of the sort of intrigue, but still a 7th-round pick who's kind of like never really consistently cracked the lineup. Keontae Graham, they drafted this year late as well, like generated a touch of buzz as well. I feel better about it there. And I'll be honest with you, in a 16-team league, which we all play in the War Room League, like, Darrell Williams will have value for some period of time this year. It might just be 1 week, literally. It could be 7 or 8 weeks. But I got to tell you, Matthew, the bigger story here remains, of course, James Conner, in my opinion. And I know that you are optimistic. He made the offseason love list, James Conner?
I didn't do an offseason love list, but if I had, I would have. Fair enough.
And I think we're going to be on the opposite side of this one here. And not that I think James Conner has no value. Of course he has value. He's a starting running back and a talented guy who can catch passes too. But I am a little nervous, and it's the number that I keep coming back to, which is less than 4 yards per carry last year. Scoring 16 rushing touchdowns in a season is so incredibly unlikely to happen once in a player's career. To even get to 10 rushing touchdowns in a season is an accomplishment. So I'm a little bit lower on James Conner than you are this season.
I will tell you this, 2 things. First off, so the anti-James Conner argument is twofold. Is number one is the injuries, right? He stayed relatively healthy last year, you know, whereas he hasn't previously in his career. And the other one is, right, touchdown regression. I believe he had 18 total touchdowns. He had the 16 rushing, and I think he caught 2. Someone keep me honest if that number is wrong. But I believe he had 18 total touchdowns last year. My counter to that argument against is that I actually don't think the touchdowns are that fluky, for two reasons. Now, listen, does he get to 18 again? I don't know. But does I think that assuming he has relatively decent health, he absolutely gets to double digit touchdowns.
Interesting. Yeah,
and
I guess.
And here's what I will tell you why. First off, we both agree pretty good at the goal line, right? He's an efficient runner. He has throughout his career, he has been very good. He has a nose for the goal line, as they say. The second thing here is that look at what Cliff Kingsbury has done in Arizona. One of the most crazy stats to me wasn't last year, but 2 years ago, when Kenyon Drake, literally Kenyon Drake, and you think about how Kenyon Drake is built, Kenyon Drake literally was top two in the NFL in goal-to-go rushing attempts. Over the last 2 years, the Arizona Cardinals have been one of the NFL league leaders in rushing attempts in goal-to-go opportunities. And obviously, some of that is because Kyler Murray is athletic, and they use him on rollouts in different ways to take advantage of his wheels. But they also, they like to run and they get when they get in close. And this is an offense that we think will be one of the best ones in the NFL and that will be in scoring position often. And so I actually don't think that the touchdowns for James Conner last year were super fluky. If you go back and read my love-hate from last year, my preseason love-hate from last year, James Conner was on it. And I was like, he's being way undervalued because I'm telling you, he will score a lot of touchdowns in this offense, which is exactly what happened. I'm not worried about the efficiency because it is such a high-volume offense, and he doesn't have a ton of touches, ton of competition for touches, including Darrell Williams, who I like. I'm a Darrell Williams fan, but I agree with you. Darrell Williams, to me, from the Cardinals' point of view, is much more about depth for that team than it is about, hey, we're bringing in someone else here to split the load with James Conner.
I'm going to say that, just to clean this up, James Conner had 15 rushing touchdowns, 3 receiving touchdowns last year for a total of 18.
Yeah, like, I just think it's
so I was right about the total of 18, and Fields was wrong about the 16.
The 16. Okay. So you both, yeah.
Double win for you. Nice
Double
job.
Double win for me.
Wow.
Can I be done with the podcast now?
Absent Derrick Henry, Jonathan Taylor right now, LaDainian Tomlinson, he was cooking. Like, absent these guys who are truly, like, one of a kind. Not one of a kind, I suppose, but you get what I'm saying. Truly built different. Yeah. I don't know. Like, if
James Conner is a nice player, he's not a special player the way that LaDainian Tomlinson is a special player.
No one would be surprised if James Conner had 6 rushing touchdowns this year.
If he was healthy, I would be. I would be surprised if he had that few.
Is he any more likely to get into the end zone than like Dalvin Cook, in your opinion?
Yeah, but
Dalvin
Cook's
like way better, way more explosive. The point I'm making is that rushing touchdowns are just so hard to predict. But Dalvin Cook's going
at least a round or two ahead of James
Conner. No. What I'm saying is that, like, how many years has Dalvin Cook had, like, I'd have to check, and maybe I'm way off, but, like, I feel like there have been years where Dalvin Cook has had, like, 6 rushing touchdowns in a season, and we're just like, oh, like,
yeah, but
that's just how the cookie crumbles sometimes.
Dalvin Cook is also a 3-down back who never comes off the field, who's much more involved in the passing game than James Conner is.
Well, is a guy that can
break an 80-yard.
Right. You're missing the point, though, is that the point I'm trying to make is we don't reflect back on Dalvin Cook's year last year and be like, man, like, he really didn't do that much. He had exactly 6 rushing touchdowns last year. The point I'm trying to make is that, like, James Conner could have 6 rushing touchdowns. Like, it's not like people are saying the narrative surrounding Dalvin Cook is he got woefully unlucky last year. No, like, just some years you only have 6 rushing touchdowns. So the point I'm trying to make is simply that, like, if James Conner has like 900 rushing yards and 6 rushing touchdowns this season, wouldn't surprise me that much at all. Now, could he have 1,200 rushing yards and 12 rushing touchdowns? He could. I just might be hedging my bets a bit more than you are.
For the record, if he hits 900 yards this year, it'll be the second time in his career he's hit 900 rushing yards. If he hits 1,200 rushing yards, it'll be the first time ever he's had over 1,000 yards.
If you buy James Conner this year, and again, I am as a RB2, a high-end RB2, like I'm as a top 12 guy.
Yeah.
And so you knock him again a spot or two for the Darrell Williams signing, but ultimately, if you are buying James Conner this year, you are buying that you think he will stay relatively healthy and you're buying the role on that offense.
Yeah. So to be honest with you, like, I actually, my James Conner evaluation wasn't tied. It's not impacted by the Darrell Williams thing. It was just sort of a way to get into my point that I'm less optimistic than you are on James Conner. And by the way, we'll find out.
That is weird to me, though. I will just say that I actually think, if I'm taking your point of view, Darrell Williams should figure it in because you're banking on touchdown regression for James Conner, which is totally fair.
I have been, yeah, no matter what.
So here's another option at the goal line. My point is you're not really worried about Eno Benjamin vulturing a touchdown. Are you worried about Kyler Murray keeping it and rolling out and scampering into the corner of the end zone? Of course you are, right? That's going to happen sometime this year. But But Darrell Williams is somebody, again, who's good in pass protection, who you could certainly see three or four times he gets into the end zone as well. So I actually think Darrell Williams supports your point more than mine. Either way, we both, I like him more than you, but I think we both probably have him ranked somewhere in the 11 to 20 range. We both have him as an RB2.
Right, but I'm closer to 20. You're closer to 11 is the point.
That is correct.
Which is okay, by the
way. Actually correct. Because I'm right and you're wrong, and it's
reasonably
fine.
Disagree.
It is completely fine.
One of these days, we're going to figure out how to have a conversation about players that's like actually tighter and efficient, but that day will come. Let's get to the story that is the real reason why not just we're here today, but why not just that this show exists, but why ESPN exists. It's for stories like this.
Yeah.
Tommy Pham, for those unacquainted, just to give you a little bit of the backstory, but not the entire backstory, is a player currently of the Cincinnati Reds. Before the Reds, he played for the San Diego Padres. He's also played for the Cardinals and the Tampa Bay Rays, amongst other stops along his professional journey. He was part of a league of MLB players, not from the same team, a collaboration of teams. These are not guys who all went to high school or college or played some, you know, elite league in their teenage year or something together. These are just a collection of guys who share a passion and interest in fantasy football. This league required a $10,000 buy-in, so obviously this was for serious players only, and we are aware, based off of reporting, that other players in this league include the likes of Manny Machado, Mike Moustakas, Eric Hosmer, of course, of the San Diego Padres as well right now, and last week...
Jock Peterson
was going to get to.
And Mike Trout. And Mike all that, yep. We know all of them are in the league. And by the way, all of them, without looking at bank accounts, all of them can afford a $10,000 entry fee.
Well, Mike Trout and Eric Hosmer and Manny Machado certainly. Yeah, Moustakas as well. And Tommy Pham played well for his career. He had an incredible 2017 season with the Cardinals. So last week, as the Cincinnati Reds are playing the San Francisco Giants, which is where Peterson now plays, during batting practice or nearing the end of it, Tommy Pham approached Jock Peterson, went up and just slapped him in the face, right across the face.
Yeah. And some of the reporting says is that Pham goes up to Peterson and that this is literally the first time they've spoken face to face in quite some time. And says, hey, you remember last year? This is Pham to Peterson. This is again, according to reporting. Pham says to Peterson, hey, you remember last year, that thing last year? And Peterson says, yeah, fantasy football. At which point, Pham slaps him across the face.
Goes up there and slaps him across the face, and you're probably asking why.
Bench is clear. It's a whole thing. They got to be separated.
It was one of my favorite things in baseball, by the way. Bench is clear. I'll go up, and then it's like, you start making small talk. Like you run out, and then it's like, hey, how's your family doing? Your kids are good? Yeah. We get everything planned for the offseason. Any trips, whatever? So what happens, as you said, Tommy Pham goes up and he slaps Jock Peterson across the face. Peterson does not retaliate. He just takes it in stride. He has a sort of Chris Rock.
I was just going to say, very Chris Rock like reaction of just like more surprised. Yep. Than anything.
And the reason why this all happened, according to Tommy Pham and Jock Peterson, is that at some point back, not this past year, this is actually 2 years ago, this is 2020 when this all took place, Tommy Pham is disappointed or was disappointed in Jock Peterson and remains disappointed in Jock Peterson because he believes that not only did Jock Peterson sort of circumvent rules in their league, which is played on ESPN, by the way, but after... whether you want to call it circumventing rules or just flat out breaking rules or interpreting them in a way that was clearly immoral in the eyes of Tommy Pham, that Jock Peterson...
probably unethical.
Unethical.
I don't think immoral, I think, is a different...
Immoral?
Right? Is it moral or is it ethics?
Immoral.
I mean, whatever.
Daniel, you're both immoral and unethical, so you tell us.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Whatever.
You are neither. For the record, unethical. You are neither, by the way. You are one of the most ethical people I know.
Yes.
I
appreciate you. No doubt about that. He gets mad, and not only that, Jock Peterson then went on to send some text messages to the group thread of all the players in the league, including a GIF that Tommy Pham took exception to. The amazing part about this is that Jock Peterson detailed all of this information in like a 4-minute stand-up with the media in the locker room before or after a game. And he was like totally taking it in stride. He's like, so Tommy was mad that I sent a GIF, and you can see it right here. And that was the reason why he was mad at me. Tommy Pham claims there was more to it and more GIFs involved.
Right.
But
what's weird is, what's weird here, Field, is that Pham and Peterson seem to basically agree on the facts of the case, so to speak, which is they both agree. Here's what they agree on. Here's what the two men agree on. That they're in a league together.
Yeah.
That Jock Peterson placed a player on IR.
Jeff Wilson Jr.
No. Pham had Jeff Wilson Jr.
I'm sorry.
So Peterson placed a player on his IR spot. And that he did so, that move was allowed the way the league was set up on ESPN.com. We appreciate them being company men. And that Pham accused Peterson of hoarding players, to which Peterson said, "You're doing the same thing with Jeff Wilson Jr." Pointed this out. And that they are, so they agree on all that, that was the dispute. And they also agree on the fact that Peterson sent some text messages, that they're in a group chat, a text message group thread, where he made some jokes, both at Pham's expense and at the Padres, his former team's expense, that you know, they were struggling in the playoffs and with high expectations. He showed a GIF of like three weightlifters, like basically throwing up weights in the air.
Yep.
And it's like Giants, Dodgers, Padres,
and the Padres,
and the Padres player has the dumbbell or whatever, the weight fall on their head. And so, and then there's other GIFs. So they all agree. Peterson admits to sending the GIF and trash talking a little bit. Pham, you know, admits to being upset by it. I don't know if that happened just after, if it had been part of a long, we don't know this.
Yeah.
Those are the facts of the case that they both sort of seem to agree on. Just to give both sides of the story here real quickly, Field, and then we can dive into our own opinions about it. Pham has since come out, just to move this forward a little bit. So that was Peterson's side of the story. And he's just like, and then he came up and slapped me, you know, out of the blue, and it's shocking. Pham's side of the story is that that while, yes, the move that Peterson made was allowed by ESPN in terms of the league manager system, they had separate rules that detailed what was allowed and not allowed in regards to the IR. And he believes that Peterson violated those rules.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can get into sort of his comments about the commissioning abilities and everything like that. But let's just start there. That's what happened over the weekend, over Memorial Day weekend, that you talked about.
Yep.
Sort of that story. Those two sides come out. And look, and the obvious thing is, we don't need to belabor this point, but just, you know, look, no one takes fantasy football more seriously than me.
Mm.
Okay. I have dedicated my life to it. I've dedicated my career to it. I've been playing since I was 14 years old, and you can take a good look at me here on the screen. I am clearly many years past 14.
And
so I have 3+ decades of fantasy sports and fantasy football playing experience. No one takes it more seriously than me, and it has never occurred to me to ever hit somebody else or resort to violence over dispute. And I've been in many fantasy football disputes over the years. I've been on the sidelines for them. I've been involved in some of them. Like, it's fantasy football, man. It's a game. It's a game we play. Like, what are you doing? And Tommy Pham is like, "Hey, man, you're messing with my money." That was part of his argument, was that he felt like he was messing with his money. And I hear you, but like, if you can't afford that entry fee, you shouldn't be in that league. And you know, that's one of the ironic parts here, is that the league entry fee was $10,000. He got suspended for 3 games by Major League Baseball for this slap, which cost him over $133,000 in game checks. So, like, you know, he cost himself, whatever, 13x what the league buy-in was by reacting this way. So number one is that's insane. It's also, or at least I think the action is insane, I should say. The other thing is that I am shocked by the fact that it's 6 weeks late, at 6 months or whatever longer that, you know, this is festered. Here's another thing that came out about this, Field. Tommy Pham claims that he was in second place when all this happened in the league, and he quit the league. Who quits a league? You don't quit a league. You don't quit a league. Like, even if you're out of it, you set your lineup, you play out the string, you have some pride and some honor in the game because your matches matter to other people in the league. You don't quit the league, Field.
Agreed. Agreed. Let me ask this. Is there any summary points that you guys feel like we haven't yet mentioned before we just get into our thoughts on the situation that are deeper than just the Cliff Notes?
Deeper than the Cliff Notes, no.
Okay. So, because there's no payoff. It's not like, hey, after the fact, they've since decided.
Well, there's one last thing. And
okay.
Then payoff. One last thing. And this is a continuing situation because I think the story's going to continue. But the last piece of sort of news about this story is that today Tommy Pham came out, or there was a story that came out, Tommy Pham talking about this incident with a number of reporters, mentioned that he put some of the blame of this incident on Mike Trout, who is the commissioner of this league. And Tommy Pham admits, hey, he was a reluctant commissioner. He didn't want to do it, but he was sort of forced into it. He agreed to do it. But Pham's point of view is that Mike Trout should have been stronger in sort of his ruling on this subject, that he could have made this all go away, that, you know, there was a disagreement about how the IR was used in this league between Peterson and Pham, and that Trout could have ruled and apparently did not enforce the rules that, as Pham sees them, were separate than what are the rules on just the website, just on ESPN.
Okay, so there's a lot that we have covered here. So just taking a step back here for a second.
And the last thing I'll say is I am sure we are taping this on Wednesday at 2:00.
Yep. It'll change.
Yes. My guess is that when the Angels play tonight, I believe they play tonight. When the Angels play tonight, either pre or post game, Mike Trout will meet with reporters and they will ask him. Somebody's going to ask Mike Trout about this. And my guess is Mike Trout will have a response.
I feel like
that will continue the story.
All right, so we've given you the nuts and bolts, and I kind of feel like at this point we can go a lot of different ways, but just like let's just sort of ping pong for a minute here about just like parts of the story that we find compelling. And I'll start right there, is that Mike Trout, as you mentioned at the top of the show, is the best baseball player on earth, like unquestionably. He is one of maybe the five greatest, most talented baseball players that has ever graced this earth. By the time it's all said and done, he could be remembered as a top five baseball player ever. Like the traditional stats, always very kind to Mike Trout. The ones that we all know, home runs and average and RBIs. The advanced stats, as we're learning more and more about how to quantify baseball, have always loved Mike Trout. Like he is in the same breath, as crazy as may seem, as players like Babe Ruth and Ted Williams and Barry Bonds. Okay. That's us special.
By the way, Angels play at the Yankees tonight.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Okay.
I'm sure the New York media won't ask him about it at all.
So you've got this guy, like, I'm not saying that the commissioner job is specifically earmarked for any one person in particular, but if I'm Mike Trout and I'm joining this league and I'm paying $10,000, I am saying, yeah, I'll join the league. I'm not the commissioner. I'm Mike freaking Trout.
Yep.
Well, how did Mike
Mike Trout's a good guy, and apparently he said yes. There's a quote here from Pham. Nobody wanted to be, this is quote, nobody wanted to be commissioner.
We're live,
by
the way.
I understand. Nobody wanted to be commissioner. I didn't want to be the blank commissioner.
Okay, thank you.
Expletive. I've got other blank to do. He didn't want to do it. We put it on him. It was kind of our fault, too, because we made him the commissioner.
Okay, but whatever. We made Mike Trout do it. Like, you think Mike Trout, if anybody has a leg to stand on, it'd be like, no. Like, absolutely not. It's Mike freaking Trout.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care what if it's like, hey, we chose the youngest guy in the league. Mike Trout would say, you know what? I'm older than you. I'm not actually, but I am. I'm telling you right now that I'm older than you because I'm Mike Trout. And if we did it by the person who had the, whatever, if they drew straws, draw them again. I'm Mike Trout.
Yeah.
I'm not the commissioner.
Right. If there's put it in another parlance. If we decide to do a fantasy football league of ESPN on-air personalities, and we all decided, hey, Stephen A. Smith, you're the commissioner.
No!
Stephen A. Smith would be like, no, I'm not doing it. And it is like, well, all right, well, I don't know who's doing it. I just know it ain't Stephen A.
Yeah, in the past, you've talked about going to a draft with Jay-Z, right?
Yes, correct.
Is he the commissioner of that league?
He is not the commissioner of that league.
That's correct. Anyways.
They did not make Jay do that. In fact, that league does something really smart. So there is somebody in the league that sort of helps organize, and it's a guy named Mike Kaiser, who's the president of Atlantic Records, who's been, him and Jay have been very close for 20 years. Everyone in that league is very close. But they also have another person who helps run everything, a man named Jonathan Feldman, who's a vice president at Atlantic Records, by the way. And Feldman is not in the league, but his job is to run the league.
I love that.
Roger Goodell of the league.
That is correct. Jay-Z, that's exactly right. And he helps keep the peace. He does not have a stake in that league. you know, but he also knows everyone in the league, and they all respect him.
And for his time a little bit. I mean, what? Does he get compensated for his time? Maybe?
I don't believe he does. That's not my.
The vice president of Atlantic Records is probably scrounging around on his couch for
Mike
change.
Mike Kaiser's
right
his
now.
Boss. What's he gonna do?
Daniel, can I ask you a question?
I'll say this, Feldman. I mean, I think he really enjoys it, just like I enjoy sort of my little role in that league.
Absolutely.
Like, I think it's a great league. It's a great group of guys, and so. My guess is I've never had this conversation with Feldman, but my guess is that he is somebody who does it because he enjoys it, because he likes everyone in the league and enjoys it. He does a great job. And anyway,
did you like how when I brought up the league in which Jay-Z plays in, Matthew was like, well, you know, Jay just, you know, he is not the commissioner of that league. Like, you have to be tight to call him Jay. You
can't just call him Jay. I feel like I've told this story before.
No, you definitely have.
No, you have.
This particular story. This particular story,
Were you ever in a movie?
Yeah, I was in a movie, Avengers Endgame, which is only the highest grossing movie of all time worldwide. No big deal. But no, what I was going to say is, it's a whole long story, but the first time I'm introduced to him, it's not like when you're introduced to somebody of his stature, it's not like you're like, Matthew Berry, meet Jay-Z, Jay-Z, Matthew Berry. Like, you know who he is, obviously.
Course, yeah.
So it's just like, I'm just like, hey, and he's just like, and Jay sort of points for me to sit next to him.
Jay.
But I don't know, but honestly, like, I'm a little internally, I am freaked out because I don't know how.
A little freaked out? Well, I would be massively freaked out.
Yeah, the whole thing is like, it's very, I knew I was
going
to. Did you
fist bump? Did you shake hands?
No. And I don't know, I'm being honest here, I don't know how to react. I knew I was going to meet him. I knew that was. Sure. When I'd been brought to the draft, but I don't know how to address him again, because it's not like I've been addressed, you know, like, so I'm like, do I call him like, Mr. do I call Z. him Jay?
Coach.
Do I call him Mr. Z,
Coach.
Mr. Carter, Hove? Like, what do I, how do I address him? We're not peers. You know, I mean, right. It's like,
you could have just been like, sup, baby. You could have just gone right in. You know what I mean?
But I literally, like, I'm sitting there the whole time I'm sitting there next to him trying to figure out how to address him.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because I don't want to offend him, you know, and it's my first time meeting him. And so I don't know. Right. And so, but everyone in the league calls him either Jay or Hove. Okay. And so I said, like 3 hours in, like I eventually, like, I finally, like, throw up a little trial balloon where I'm just sort of like, hey, Jay, maybe we should think about a tight end here. You know, I just sort of throw that out there, like, and like, he didn't react negatively. He didn't like you know,
all right.
Hey, like, look at me weird, like, you know, who are you to address me by my first name or anything like that. So, you know, I just sort of,
Do you think
I've known him for a decade now. So yes, I can call him Jay.
Do you think people in the baseball league call him Mr. Trout, or do you think they call him Mike? I mean, knowing that they're
call him God. Is what they should call him. He's Mike Trout. He's God. Anyways, we have let's get to a couple of minutes of this. So,
all right.
There are some lessons learned
but
here.
But I did sweat that for a number of hours. Like, how do I address them?
There's
a lot
of lessons to be learned here. And first, you mentioned this earlier, and I think it's implied, but just to remind people, like, never let fantasy football rise to the level of violence. That being said, it's clear that Tommy Pham has an incredible passion for fantasy football, which I think is really cool. I think it's cool that all these guys have an incredible passion for fantasy football. And you can imagine that while being a baseball player is surely a dream job, those last couple months of the season that overlap with the football season, like, baseball is a monotonous profession. You show up to work every single day for 162 out of 180 days to play a game that sometimes, if you're an outfielder, you may have like 3 balls hit to you over the course of 3 hours and you may get 3 plate appearances. Like, I know it's an amazing job. These guys are well compensated, but also baseball is a long, monotonous season. Anyways,
every major league team, literally every major league team, has at least one highly competitive fantasy football league in their clubhouse.
Sure, I would be stunned if they're.
I cannot tell you how many major league baseball players I know of that play fantasy football. Many of them have reached out to me. I know many of them reached out to you. There's a lot.
People love fantasy football. So let's just talk about being a commissioner for a little bit, because it really is a thankless job.
It's the worst
job. Can anybody is there any upside to be the commissioner? I am the commissioner of a fantasy basketball league here at ESPN. I've been the commissioner of several fantasy football leagues over the years. There's zero redemptive qualities to it.
No, like, the upside is you get to take all the money that everybody has and you get to put in your PayPal account, and then
you have to sit there and wait.
While all that money sits in your PayPal. I mean, assuming that that's what happens.
So there are zero. So that, as far as the commissioner side of it goes, like, it's just not fun at all. So
it's awful.
Mike Trout, thank you for your service.
Yeah. Well, well, it's an awful job. It's a thankless job. No one's ever happy. No one complains. No one is happy. And I turn to our very own Daniel Dopp. Mm-hmm. Daniel Dopp, who started our internal Dynasty League.
I have a lot of feelings with this because of this whole thing.
I was just going to say. Yeah. So Daniel, terrible commissioner. Yeah. And I love you, but yeah. I'm not saying anything to you I haven't said to your face.
Absolutely.
Daniel was bad at being a commissioner of this Dynasty League, so much so that we had to bring in a closer. He was removed as commissioner. And we brought in all biz, Scott Clark.
Scott Clark stepped aside. Here's the thing. I wanted to start the league, but I didn't want to because being a commissioner is, I mean, there's just a lot to it. There really is. And so understanding that Mike Trout, it's hard to be able to say, Field, how do we say, all right, the commissioner's got to be able to stand up and say, all right, here's my ruling on this situation. When again, it's Mike freaking Trout and he's got other things that are probably more important than fantasy baseball.
The hardest part about being a commissioner, the part that I think is most uncomfortable, is that whether you have 10 people, 12 people, whatever the number of people are, invariably there are different degrees to which people care in that league. Mm-hmm. And there are times, and especially over these past few years, we've been dealing with COVID, which is a huge part of commissioner duties. It's like navigating, how do you handle roster sizes? Do we have COVID exemptions? Do we not? If a player is on the COVID list, does that count as an IR spot? If a player is on the IR spot and then gets COVID, does he get to go to the IR, the COVID list instead? A lot of different complicating factors. But usually what happens when you're the commissioner is no one says a thing to you unless there's a problem, right? And oftentimes when there's a problem, one person deems it to be a much larger problem than the person on the other side of the equation, which seems to be the case here in this league, right? As clearly this bothered Tommy Pham to a degree that was however many higher than Jock Peterson. Is it kind of rolled off the shoulders of Jock Peterson, who, by the way, just seems like a very sort of relaxed guy by nature.
Totally.
And that's what's hard about this. So, being a commissioner is not fun. Thank you for those that do it. I have finally met someone this offseason. As I joined a league, the most incredible commissioner I've ever seen. I've never been more informed about what's going on with my league. But can I be honest with you? It's this league that I'm playing in. It's a salary cap league. We draft a full roster of players. And you know how Scott Fishbowl makes multiple, but usually like the scoring system specific to one position tends to be like very unique each and every year. It's been tight end in the past, quarterback last year. This league that I'm playing in, every single position is completely unique. It makes and it makes absolutely no sense to me. So this league that I have joined, and there's 32 teams in this league. So and each team has like 50 players on it. There are so many different things you have to manage. I have no idea what I'm doing. But I have a great commissioner. He's an awesome guy. His name is John Peace. So shout out John Peace.
Heck yeah. Shout out to John Peace. I was like our friend Kevin Murray, who won like Commissioner of the Year. We did a contest
times,
here.
I think.
Here at ESPN, and he came up and visited us.
Yeah, the
us.
Doctor is, he probably is the best because
he's really
entertainment
good.
Value.
And I've written
off
about
the
this,
charts.
And I've written about this in Fantasy Life, and I've shared it a lot on social media. There are great commissioners out there as well that do, you know, that really bring a league. Do a lot more, you know, that what they'll do is they will, you know, they make draft day special. They have, you know, all sorts of different
weekly write-ups as far as like, write-ups, all those
like,
things.
For fantasylife.com, we did a contest last year in this, the FML, the freaking man's league is what they call themselves. And they won, and they do a whole thing where like one of the wives, like they rent out this whole restaurant. One of the wives runs the red carpet. So they all have to walk. They do a red carpet entrance. The wives like interviews them. They have like social media, like they have a whole YouTube channel. I mean, like it's unbelievable. And so the commission of that league and all the other leagues out there. So they're being a great commission can absolutely elevate the experience. Whereas a bad commissioner can make it miserable. And you are absolutely right, Field. It is the worst job. It is a thankless job. No one ever hears from you until they have a complaint. And I think your point about people have different levels of interest, that's, you know, and they also interpret things differently. Like I know you want to do should we do a live read? Because I want to bring up one thing about our Dynasty League, which I think is interesting.
I'll do a live read and then we'll come back and then we'll do that. And then why don't we each in our minds prepare like our favorite / most entertaining part of this Tommy Pham and
Perfect.
Jock Peterson story
Love
before
that.
We okay. put a bow on this show. Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Well, the answer is, of course you would. After all, who doesn't love a great deal, right? And when it comes to great rates on insurance for all the things in your life, Geico can help.
Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, your RV as well. It can even help with homeowners, condo, or renter's insurance. You could save even more with a special discount when you bundle your coverages. Plus, add the easy-to-use Geico mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more. And choosing to switch to Geico becomes an even easier choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote or contact your local agent and get started seeing how much you could save. All right, so Dynasty League interpretation issue. Tell me more.
So this is something, and I'll talk myself here, right? And so there was an issue in our Dynasty League prior to Scott Clark taking over where, in essence, I realized I was not it was not my year. It was not my year. I'd had a ton of injuries in this Dynasty League, and as we've talked about previously on this show, I believe you either need to be going for first or last in your league. That finishing middle of the pack does you no good at all in a Dynasty League. Mm-hmm. And so I very publicly said, guys, it's not my year. I sent out emails to the entire league. I am willing to trade stars for picks. Well, you know, older guys for younger guys. I am tanking for Trevor. So this is 2 years ago for Trevor Lawrence. Like I am very public about this. And I start actively tanking. I'm still setting a lineup every week, but I am not trying to win. And there was a dispute from somebody else in the league saying like, hey, how dare you not try to win? And I'm like, I am trying to win. I know that I can't win this year. And so because it's a dynasty league, what I am doing, I am actively managing my team in an effort to help my team win eventually. Yeah. Again, I am doing what I believe is in the best interest of my team for success on the fantasy field. Yeah. And the answer to that was not to, you know, was to try to build a roster that would not be competitive that season, but one that would be competitive in the future. Right. And this other, I don't want to call this person out by name because they're not here to defend their side of it. But this person's point of view was you should be trying to win every single game. You should be trying to finish as high as you can every year. And because that affects other people right. in the Dynasty League. And so I don't think that person was wrong in how they, in their point of view, but I also don't think I was wrong. It's just an interpretation, and we didn't have any strong anti-tanking rules. Right. You know what I mean? I'm just like, I felt like in the spirit of fantasy football, I was doing what I should do, which is managing my team to the best of my ability to set me up for success.
Mind you, you're very specifically talking about Dynasty and
Dynasty,
not redraft.
Correct.
Like if this was redraft, totally different conversation.
Totally different conversation. Yep. I agree. Yeah.
I've always felt like, and not that this is the point of the conversation, but if you're going to have a Dynasty League that allows people to tank, that there should be a lottery, so to speak, for that first overall pick. So if there's 12 teams and six make the playoffs and six don't, then you establish some level of odds like the NBA does. And hey, you rather than the person with the worst record automatically getting the first pick, they've got a 28% chance and it descends from there. Anyways, let's get to a few.
But to your point, I think I agree with you that there's that tanking is somebody that tanking, quote unquote, needs to be addressed in dynasty leagues. There needs to be some mechanism in place. And that was, I think, where the dispute and like me and this other manager, we never came to blows. We're still friends and it was just, you know, we exchanged a couple of, you know, emails or texts. I forget which it was where we both expressed our own viewpoints.
Yeah.
But my point is because there wasn't a strong rule in place, that's where a dispute comes up. And so that would be my biggest thing is, and then we can get into the last, but my biggest thing is that every league needs to have a strong commissioner, needs to have a strong set of rules. And most importantly, because not every, even if you come up with the greatest set of rules in the world, there's always going to be stuff that comes up, especially as we enter into a world where we're still in COVID and it's uncharted territory. So I think there also needs to be a very specific way to handle disputes. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what the best way I've ever seen so far is. So you guys I've written about this before, but in my very first fantasy league, the Fat Dog Rotisserie Baseball League back in my hometown of College Station, Texas.
Yep.
Been going on since 1984, this league. And so their rule is that there is a commissioner.
Okay.
And the commissioner makes rulings. Just, you know, if there's a dispute, Field and I have a dispute, we go to the commissioner, Daniel, say, Daniel makes a ruling. If either you or I disagree with that ruling, we can then make an appeal to the competition committee. Okay. So it's a 12-person league, and there are three people That does not include the commissioner. There are three people that are in a competition committee,
okay,
and they can vote on the appeal. So, and it's three people, so it'll be 2-1 at most. There'll be, and there's also an alternate for the competition committee, because if the dispute involves either the commish or somebody that is in the competition committee,
sure,
that person recuses themselves and the alternate steps in. And the way it has been set up is this particular league is that there's the commissioner did a good job of choosing the people on the competition committee, because there's one person who's kind of a hardliner.
Okay.
There's a person who's, you know, very much more laissez-faire. And then there's somebody who's sort of in the middle, and it sort of
pretty
works
good
out, you know, because yeah, you have different point of views. To your point, everyone takes leagues and rules, interpret them differently.
Yeah, they do. Daniel, anything that sort of stands out to you for as you're reflecting upon these past 5 days or so of drama?
When I look at the idea that there was money on the line, decided to walk away from the league because someone was messing with his money, even though he was in second place and it was a $10,000 buy-in. The idea, like we have already said, you know, the money was on the line for everybody else. And when you walk away, you mess that up for everyone else. So as a commissioner, or if you ever are in a situation, I feel like where you have somebody that leaves a fantasy league midseason, one, it's the last time I play in a fantasy league with that person.
Yeah.
Yeah, one, totally.
Okay. Two, you are either making sure that somebody in that league is, you've designated someone's going to set it so that it's a competitive lineup, or there's some kind of something to make sure that that person doesn't ruin it for everyone else. Because as much as Fam wanted to say, you're messing with my stuff, now he's messing with everybody else along the way. So that's like, when I was reading that, it's like, can you not see, can you not understand like the hypocrisy in what you're saying here when you see that? I think that was my biggest takeaway.
My biggest takeaway was this, is there have been some occasions in my life, and it tends to be with in conversations with people that are maybe a generation or a generation and a half older than I am, where...
Oh, you weren't talking about Matthew? Matthew
actually would be... He would understand this. He can probably speak to this much better than I can, where I'll say like, oh, so like, what do you do? Or if like my parents are asked, well, you have children. Okay, you've got three children. You have two sons and a daughter. All right, daughter's a lawyer. First son's a real estate agent. How about your second? Yeah, he's a fantasy football analyst. And they're like, pardon? Like first of all, A, that's a job. B, like, what do you do when it's not football season? And I feel like this sort of perfectly captured that, like, if you play fantasy football, I'm not saying you condone it. I'm not saying that you agree with it, but you get the passion. I'm not saying you get the actions, but you get the passion.
You absolutely get it.
Right? Like, you're sitting here and you're like, listen, I wouldn't have slapped Jock Peterson. I wouldn't have come close to it. But I've been pissed about people circumventing rules in the past myself, right? This is the beauty of what we do, is that over the next 7 or 8 weeks, it's going to be pretty quiet on the news front, barring things that we aren't currently expecting. But at some point over the next like 6 or 7 or 8 weeks, there's going to be like a guard, some random guard who has been unsigned for 4 months, who signs like the Bears. And he's going to make $3 million next year. And someone's going to come up to Matthew when he's on vacation, or me, or you, or whatever, or tweeted us like, hey, what does this mean for David Montgomery's fantasy value? You know what the answer probably is? Like, absolutely nothing.
Right.
Like, it means that the guy probably is taking David to dinner because he's got $3 million in the bank, right? That's about what it means. But this is what makes fantasy football what it is that we will grasp at any little morsel of information and try to apply it to this sport, and I'm calling it a sport, that we love. Now, this was to the extreme and it obviously crossed a boundary, but this is why we love what we do, is that it's sort of a suspension of reality because it's not real life, but it is real life for us because it is literally our job to talk about this stuff. And I thought this story just sort of encapsulated it, even the dark side of it included, like fantasy football is a different sort of passion and love.
Yeah. I mean, to your point, Field, I think anyone that plays fantasy sports, when they saw this story is like, I get it. I've been there, maybe not to the extent that you want to hit somebody or that kind of stuff, but everyone, and I include myself in this, has been on those text threads, have sent a tweet or an email or a text or something like that where you were expressing displeasure or fighting for your side of a dispute. We've all been there. We've all seen our other league mates go through that as well. And I think that this was another example of just sort of like, yeah, man, like, everyone plays.
Yeah.
Like, and I always talk about this, that I always talk about that I think fantasy football is the great equalizer, right? It's not just schmoes like the three of us. It is rock stars and politicians and famous Major League Baseball players.
Yeah.
And it's also kids and grandmas and, you know, like everyone in between.
The Avengers League, right? All the superheroes.
All the superheroes play. Like, whatever.
Totally.
Jay-Z play. Like, you know,
right.
There's very little in this world I have in common with Jay-Z, but there's one thing.
There's one.
Yeah. We both play fantasy football.
It's awesome.
I mean, like, and so that's the, you know, I feel like it's the great equalizer. And I think that, you know, the way you become a Major League Baseball player, it's not only you're blessed with great athleticism, but you have worked and trained and had insane competition and wanting to beat everyone else. You're highly intense, right? You know, you've trained your whole life and you want to be able to, you're highly competitive, I guess is the way I would say it, right? Like
yeah.
you don't get to the level that Jock Peterson and Tommy Pham are at. You don't get to that level unless you are highly competitive, and it's not just you're good, but you want to be better than everyone else.
Yeah, Albert Haynesworth has a word to say about that, but no.
Albert Haynesworth was a great, I mean, he got paid and he quit, but prior to that, he was a great player.
Before right. that, you're right, correct.
Before that's that, right.
Before he started playing for your
my
football
point
team,
is,
right.
is you know, those Tommy Pham and Jock Peterson were the best kids on their little league team, the best kids in their high school.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they've always been the elite of the elite, the best kid in their city, the best kid in their town, the best, you know, probably one of the best kids in their state, et cetera, yeah. et cetera, et cetera, their entire lives. And so my point is like, so it makes sense that they would be highly competitive about fantasy football. And that's the thing that when you're that famous and you're that rich, but it's something you can't control. You can't, you know, I mean, we're all sitting there sweating when the guy steps out of bounds at the 1 yard line or your touchdown gets called back because of a penalty or because, you know, or like, you know, they're going to throw it to your wide receiver, but all of a sudden a back end, you know, backup tight end snatches it before it gets there. And you're like, wait, why? Uh-huh. Why is it going to that guy? You know, like,
totally.
Don't, yeah. What are you doing? Yeah. Really? A draw play to Kyle Juszczyk? No one has Kyle Juszczyk.
Right.
And so we've all been there. And I think that was one of my biggest takeaways is just, I thought it was like for us in the know, we know, but I think for people overall, it's just like, yeah, like everyone plays fantasy football. Literally everyone plays fantasy football.
Yeah.
My last thing here I want to say is, and it'll be interesting to see what Trout says tonight. I do agree with Tommy Pham on this one point, though.
Okay.
Because clearly between Peterson and Pham, both, you know, obviously seasoned fantasy football managers, clearly both have played in leagues a long time. There's clearly some clarity issues around what the IR rules were. Peterson understood them to be one thing. Pham understood them to be another thing. And so when there's lack of clarity, you do need a commissioner to say, like, guys, you know, it's red or it's blue.
Yep.
Pick a side. And then in the off season, you guys can have a vote and really talk about whether, you know, hey, when this comes up in the future, it'll always be red or it'll always be blue or whatever it is. But like, you need a commissioner to say, like, guys, it is what it is. I've ruled that it's red and we're moving on.
And we'll address in the off season if we don't like it or whatever. You're right.
Yeah, 1,000%. And yep. That clearly didn't happen here with Trout. Right. And he was a reluctant commissioner. We get all that. I'm just saying.
What a lame guy Mike Trout is, huh? I mean, geez.
Literally by the way, my favorite, you know, one of my favorite Major League Baseball players of all time.
I think that it would only be fair for us to offer the opportunity for Mike or Jock or Tommy
yeah.
to come on the show and share some fantasy football thoughts for the upcoming season if they are so inclined.
We would love to have them. Open invitation to any and all of them as well. And by the way, next time, guys, call me. I will rule this for you.
I will litigate this.
Yeah. I do this for other leagues.
Yes, and for a living.
And for a living as well.
Well, that's a heck of a story. It is incredible. We'll see where the next turns in this story lead us to. But we thought it would be fun to sort of dedicate most, if not all, of the show to the story that has been sweeping the football, the fantasy football world, the baseball.
The sports world.
The baseball world. I mean, candidly, I think baseball's sort of sitting here like, we got some... It's hard to generate buzz for a team. The Reds are they're the worst team in baseball right now. Like
right.
This has been the most prominent story for the Reds this year, other than the fact yeah. that the Reds continue to lose a lot of baseball games. I think they also lost a game in which they didn't allow a hit as well, which that seems improbable. It's confirmed to the Pirates, which is not.
That's incredible. That's like the Lions losing to the Green Bay Packers last year and never actually trailing the entire game because you lose at a field goal.
At a moment in the sports world when football will always die. People will always talk about football.
Yeah.
when the NHL playoffs are going on and they're awesome.
Yeah, they
when
are.
When the NBA finals are about to start and the NBA playoffs so far this year have been awesome. And then we've got this huge golf match today that's just fun between, you know, Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes taking on Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. So there's all these different
guys are okay.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, there's all these different stories. And so all of a sudden now, because of this, people are talking about baseball at a time when they normally wouldn't be. Because of all the other things that are happening in the sports world and on the sports calendar. And so ultimately just goes to show you, like, you know, fantasy football rules the world.
You think baseball's like, we got to find a way to get football more involved in our sport.
There's like, by the way, there's like a memo going out today from like the MLB. Being like, all right, if you guys are going to fight, just make sure you talk about it because I'm kidding. Obviously we don't want to condone that in any way, shape or form. So a story that again, may have some more developments coming ahead. We shall see. In the meantime, we are back next Monday, which is our normal time for this show. Yep. We'll come back and we'll talk just more traditional fantasy football things. What's on our mind might be the topics.
Guys that are too low and too high in early confusing. ADP. We're already seeing people doing drafts. Best ball drafts are going on as well, obviously.
Out the notebook, if you will.
Yeah. And follow us on TikTok at Fantasy Focus Football if you are a TikTok follower. Jackson has set up a TikTok for us.
I have a TikTok.
What's your TikTok, Matthew?
It's at Matthew Berry TMR.
Oh, nice. Wow. Yeah. Follow at Fantasy Focus Football.
I will. Does at Fantasy Focus Football follow me on TikTok at Matthew Berry TMR?
Probably not. He actually only follows worthwhile people.
This is the second time in a row we shut off the music because we've talked too long for it.
Sorry, we got to go. That. All right, we're talking to you guys on Monday. For Daniel and Matthew, I'm Field.
Peace out.
He's a fantasy guru in a boat on an island. Going full Haynesworth without even trying. Award-winning creations like his news or noise segment are reasons we all love the cut of his jib. Country fast and strong, portaling away again in Matthew Berryville. Searching for a field shoe in a pile of junk. When you lose a bet, you have 1 year to pay. He's the king of football fantasy. He's Matthew Berry. He's Matthew Berry. He's Matthew Berry.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.